Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I'm with Tim Tivisar, the defensive coordinator at Oregon State. Coach, how's, first of all, before we talk football, how's family life been sort of amid the coronavirus and being at home more?
Well, it's certainly been a change. I can't remember any time in my coaching career I've been home for this many dinners, especially in a row. Which has been awesome. That part of it, you know, you try to look at positives in every situation, and the opportunity to have some more family time and be around the family more has been great. And still trying to work as efficiently as possible with our current situation.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, football's a year-round thing. You normally have been out recruiting during some of this time. You know, is that a positive benefit? Is it giving football coaches the chance to kind of go, hey, remember when this wasn't a year-round thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's funny you say that because I remember when I first started dating my wife years and years ago, my mother-in-law was wondering, well, what do you do in the off-season? and there is no off-season. But normally, yeah, we spend 6 weeks during springtime after spring ball finishes up out on the road in recruiting. And whether we're out, you know, 3 or 4 days a week or sometimes even all 5 days a week out on the road visiting high schools and coaches and talking to them and watching kids practice in the springtime and all that this year was obviously taken away. And so it does change up the schedule a little bit. I know that we've been able to do a lot more self-scout study, looking at other things on how to improve and studying other people and stuff like that you normally don't have the time to do because you're spending that much time on recruiting.
Now, my researchers tell me that you're a girl dad. You've got a daughter. I have three daughters. I love sort of being a girl dad, and I wouldn't have it any other way, especially because, you know, I get them out and we're throwing the ball around. What has that experience been like for you? Kind of because you work with young men all the time, and you come home and you've got a daughter.
Yeah, you know, it's been a blessing. I mean, having my daughter around and, you know, she knows, obviously, I'm a coach and everything like that and that football is important, but she doesn't care a whole lot. You know, I mean, whether yeah. we did this or we did that or doesn't know football too well and I don't come home and get critiqued or anything like that. She's just happy when I'm happy, but this spring has been a lot of fun. We've gone on a bunch of walks and got to throw the softball around a bunch in our cul-de-sac and do some of those things, which I normally, like I said, I'd be gone and wouldn't be able to do.
When you were a kid, you know, we all had that time when maybe we were 8 or 9 years old and they said, what do you want to be? Did you say football coach or was there something else?
No, not at all. I'll be honest. I went to college and I had no idea I was going to be a football coach. My father was a policeman, and so that was law enforcement was something that interests me. I had an uncle who was a pilot, and that was something that interests me. I ended up getting a business degree from college. I thought that was going to be the direction I was going to go, and really, I just ended up having such a great experience as a player in college that I thought, man, if I can have half as much fun coaching as I did playing, then it won't be working, and who wants to work?
Yeah, no kidding. We're talking to Tim Tivisar, Oregon State's defensive coordinator. You kind of glossed over it. You said business degree, but you were a 4.0 in economics. That's not easy to do. But why were you such a good student? Where does that come from?
It was academics was always a priority in our family. And you were always expected to, in everything you did, try to do your absolute best. And I was fortunate that I was able to do well in school. I had to work at it. I wasn't one of those guys that just always came to them. But if I worked at it, I knew I could do well. And I was able to continue that on through college.
You must talk to some players, and you know, being a guy that played football at a high level and then also was a student at a high level, what kinds of tips do you give students that can help them get better grades? Because I'm sure there are little things that 4.0 students do. Is it where you sit in the classroom? Is it asking questions? Is it staying after class? What is it?
Yeah, you hit on a bunch of those right there. We tell all our guys, hey, sit in the front two rows in your class. First day of class, make sure you go up, introduce yourself to the teacher. If they have any teaching assistants, make sure you introduce yourself to them so they know who you are, they know what your name is. You know what I mean? And then when you're struggling, go see them. And then they know that you're great and how well you do and learning the subject is important to you. And if they see you every day, you know, in those front two rows, they'll know that you're there. They know your name. Those types of things are all kind of little tips on how to do well in school. And, you know, you got to be invested in your own academic improvement.
Tim Tibisar is our guest, Oregon State's defensive coordinator. You guys on defense got better last season. I think a lot of people are wondering how good you're going to be this year. Where do you think the strength of the defense is right now?
Well, we do have a lot of guys that played a lot of football for us coming back for next year. We made a nice jump from year one to year two. We need to make a similar type of jump again going into year three. We certainly have plenty of room to improve in a lot of areas. You know, we're not a top defense in the country yet by any stretch. But it is exciting to have a lot of guys coming back who played a lot of good football for us, and seeing them, if they grow individually and get better, then we can grow and get better as a unit.
And I think sometimes, you know, football's, we say it's a simple game. It's, you know, it's blocking, it's running the football. And on the defensive side of the ball a couple years ago, you guys really struggled in the run game, and then you made some strides last year. Is that a personnel thing? Was there schematically something you were doing differently? What's the biggest marker there when you talk about that step up you took?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a lot more that we got better at the techniques that you need to do to execute good defense. We got better at beating blocks. We got better at tackling. The call sheet really didn't change a whole lot. There's a couple of wrinkles we added, but at the end of the day, you know, We got better at each position. We got better play at the D-line. We got better play at the, you know, inside and outside backer positions. And then even in the secondary, we became better tacklers. And that's how you get better. It's, you know, if there was some simple scheme thing that you could do, there's a lot of smart coaches out there in football, then we'd all be doing the same scheme. It's getting, developing the players that you do have, and then trying to improve your roster through recruiting and stuff like that to make your team get better.
A kid that I really watched last year, and I thought, you know, wow, what a good story. Jaden Grant, he was on the field a lot. He made some big plays, had the pick six for you guys against Washington. And can you maybe talk a little bit about his growth? And when you see a kid who, you know, shows up, walks on, and just works his butt off, what that means to you?
Yeah, I mean, Jaden's a great story, a great example of a young man who bet on himself, walked on at Oregon State, has been able to, you know, I mean, earn a scholarship now, and has really made the most of his opportunity. And he's a hard worker. He's a student of the game. He asks questions. He wants to learn, wants to do it the right way, studies football. And then he's one of those guys that has a knack. I remember last spring, he made a ton of plays. He made a bunch of takeaways and interceptions and fumble recovery, those types of things. And then he did the same thing in fall camp. And then sure enough, during the course of the season, he's just always around the football and was able to make plays for us. And yeah, he made a huge play for us to get that pick against Washington, took it to the house, and kept us in the game there. And you know, I'm just real proud of what he's been able to do. And when you see a guy like that working hard, it's so good for your entire football team, because this is a guy that did walk on. And when he's working that hard, man, if I'm on scholarship, I better get going. I'm going to get replaced by this guy. And so what he brings to the table there just by his work ethic and how he goes about his business is great for our football team and our locker room.
You've talked about planning to play and being an optimist. You're an optimistic person, but I kind of wonder, like, amid football coaches, do you think more coaches are optimists versus pessimists?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I think just probably everybody's personality is their own and unique. But obviously, you know, as a coach, you always think that your team's going to do extremely well and you're planning for success and preparing for those types of things as a coach. And I think that's, you know, I know I wouldn't want to attack the day any other way. You know what I mean? That whatever the situation is that presents us, that we can make the most out of it and turn it into a positive experience.
I would just think, because I think about coaches a lot in this context, because you scheme, you come up with a scheme, or on offense, maybe you're drawing up a play in a formation, and on defense, you're trying to disrupt all that. But I would think that, you know, more often than not, you'd have to have a positive outlook, or it would be so discouraging, you know, going into a game. Because I've never talked to a coach going into a game who I thought, at least at the surface level, felt like they were going to lose the game. Like, it's like two heavyweight fighters getting in the ring. You both think they're going to win.
Yeah, there's no question. I think that's the genetic makeup of almost every coach, that, you know, even if the odds are stacked against you, even if you're a heavy underdog, you know what? Well, if the ball bounces our way and we get a couple takeaways or we do this or we do that, you know, we can win this game. And you truly believe that. I do think that's in the nature of most coaches. I do know this. You're talking about, you know, your scheming or planning. As an optimist, I've never called a play and said, well, thought this is never going to work, I'm going to call it anyway. You always call it thinking it's going to work. Now, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't, but you always call it thinking it's going to work.
I have talked to coaches who, after the game, will still insist, we were in the right coverage, we were in the right front, this should not have worked. You know, it's just on paper, it doesn't work, but you're at the mercy of those 19, 20-year-old kids that are on the field that have to execute it.
Absolutely. Well, and even you can even take that further into the pros, and you're at the, you know what I mean, of 22 to 32 year olds who, you know what I mean, this play shouldn't work or that play shouldn't work. You know what I mean? It's, you know, we call it something that's designed to stop that. And yet at the same time, exactly like you said, the players that are out there still have to go out and execute it. And that's why it always has been and always will be a player's game. Tim. You know, us coaches are certainly involved in it and everything like that, but my days of making tackles out on the football field are over. And so it doesn't matter, you know, you can make the call and have a guy right in the right place at the right time and everything like that, and he still has to make that play for you.
When you were playing at North Dakota, did you have like a pregame tape or a mix that you'd listen to?
You know, back then I didn't have like MP3 players where you could just pick out your songs. You had to, you know, maybe you had to have a whole either cassette player or, you know, the guys that were on the cutting edge had the CDs. But no, I just whatever was playing in the locker room. To get ready before the game.
I always look at defensive guys like that. Like, I used to, some defensive guys would say, oh, they like Phil Collins because it's got a guy that kind of, we're letting it brew, and then, you know, you get the drums at the end. And I had other guys that didn't want to hear any music. They, you know, they just, they say they like to get out and kind of be focused before the game, be thinking about assignments. Tim Tibisar is our guest. Before I cut you loose, athletically, on the defensive side of the ball, do you have better athletes now than you had 2 years ago? And where are you in recruiting sort of the athletes that you're talking to now versus maybe the guys that when you walked in the door?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, we were happy with the progress of our recruiting since we've been here. I think we've been able to improve the roster. I think that we've been able to develop the players that were here before we got here. And as soon as we became the staff, they're our guys. I mean, they're not somebody else's guys. They were, doesn't matter who they got recruited, if they're still on the football team when Coach Smith took over, they were our guys, and that was our approach all along. And we're going to develop the guys that are here, and we're going to try to go out and recruit the best players possible. We certainly feel like the roster's in better shape than it was when we first got here, and that's why we're excited about, you know, I mean, what the future holds here in this next year, and I think if you kind of just go across by position, even just on the defensive side, that, you know, I think we're better here, or we have more depth here than we did when we first got here. And I think that's been a reason for some of the success that we had from year one and year two, and hopefully again year two to year three.
Father's Day coming up this weekend. What did your dad give you that you still carry with you today?
You know, my dad really gave me a work ethic and taught me early on in my life that if you want to be successful or you want to have anything, you got to work for it. And, you know, I think that's been ingrained in me, and I carry that to this day. And that, you know, nothing's given to anybody. You got to go out, and if you want to be successful and you want to have something, you got to go out and work for it.
Coach, I appreciate you. Thank you. And good luck this season. I'll talk to you probably early in the season, but I appreciate you making time for us.
You bet. Take care, John.
Okay, take care.
See ya.
Tim Tibisaar, coach, defensive coordinator, Oregon State. I love that. I do think that football coaches are inherently optimistic. Like, think about it. You couldn't draw up a play and then go, no, this isn't going to work, but I'm still going to draw it up. You'd have to draw every play up, every game. You'd have to show up with a game plan that you were sure was going to be successful. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. I'm sure the rest of this show is going to be a smashing success. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, my wife will join the show probably mid-hour or so, maybe a little bit into the show. I don't know. She's been rummaging around the studio. She usually just walks in. You know, guys, I'm not in charge of her. That's the bottom line. The Culligan Water Cooler Report is something we do every day, so gather around.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
I want to thank Culligan of Oregon for their support of this fine radio show. If you've got a need to improve the quality of your drinking water, give Culligan of Oregon a chance to do that for you. I had them come over the house. They just went to the outside faucet and did a water test there. I didn't even know they were here. My sister did the same thing at her house. So if you have water that you're not happy with, or maybe you have a question about, give Culligan of Oregon a chance to do that for you. The story I want to talk about and kick around with you guys is Jackson State and Tennessee State's scheduled football game. It was supposed to be played on September the 12th. The Southern Heritage Classic football game has been canceled. It's believed to be the first college football game canceled because of the pandemic. They're not going to play this game. It's been played since 1990. It is annually matched football teams from historically black colleges and universities at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. And the game's promoters announced today that it has been canceled because of the coronavirus pandemic. Believed to be the first college football game canceled because of the pandemic. Now, on Monday, the health department in Shelby County, where Memphis is located, reported 256 new coronavirus cases. It was the largest increase in a single day since the beginning of the pandemic. They announced that the anticipated move into phase three of their reopening would be delayed as a result. So the game's organizers are calling it off. Last season, they had 48,000 who watched Jackson State beat Tennessee State. 75,000 people annually attend the three-day event. It includes tailgating. It includes a parade. I want to know what you guys make of this. Was it premature for the Southern Heritage Classic to call the game? Let's kick that around. Alabama, Adriana, Judah, is it premature? Are they jumping the gun here, or what is going on with this?
I think they're probably just trying to be cautious. But on a side note, what kind of a name is Southern Heritage for a mostly black school and game to be participating in? That just seems a little bit sketchy to me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, traditionally it is, you know, the bands at the at colleges that play in this game are bigger than the football game. The parade is bigger. I kind of feel like the promoters are going, look, the football game, yeah, okay, that's not going to happen. But I kind of feel like they were focused more on kind of the three-day event that is the parade and the bands playing and sort of the festival of this game.
Yeah, no, in Birmingham we have the Classic, and that's it sounds pretty similar to that. There's like a whole, there's like a walk with people setting up food and tents, and it's like a giant tailgate, basically, and it's a, this big event that happens every year. So it sounds similar to that. But yeah, I think that they're just trying to be cautious. I mean, that is a lot of new cases in one day.
I also think there's something, like, I agree they're being cautious, but I also think that you've got to look at the an event like this and understand that there are a lot of sponsors involved. There are a lot of small businesses involved. You're amid a pandemic. You're asking a lot of your sponsors. You're asking a lot of people to gather, and 75,000 people who have historically showed up, and the football game happens. And so I think they're kind of just going, we can't pull this off amid a pandemic. All right, the 2 o'clock hours.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.